Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Poop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fam is like, woo!
Nah, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
You don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners. You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be peace.
Don't get no more realer.
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. The fellas are back in the house. The three-man booth is back in full effect. First off, I'd like to say you could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us, and we appreciate your patronage. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer, and one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. Now, before we get into the proceedings this evening, allow me to introduce my comrades. To my right, I got my man, 100 grand, D. Wills. Holla at the people.
Man, I feel bad. I feel good. I'm back. It's been a great week of sports, man. I feel like I'm home again, back in the mix, man. I'm good to be here. I'm excited about what we're going to talk about this week.
Yes, sir. We got a lot to get into a Super Bowl week, and so we got a great show in store for you. But before we get into all of that good stuff that we have for the Renegade family out there, the Renegade fans out there, I got to bring in my man, Phil T, Sports PhD. What's happening, Captain?
Hey, what's up, man? It's great show last week with Justin Page. Thanks for pinch hitting. Devon, it's great to have you back, and welcome back, Otter.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. So we back at it, as always. This portion of the show is known as the intro to let you know. So we're going to go ahead and jump right in, all right? So first thing we got in store is we're going to have a conversation, funky editorial, like we always do. We're going to get into this Super Bowl. Super Bowl wins can elevate people. They have a tremendous impact on how we view athletes, organizations, teams, et cetera. And so we're going to talk about and have a conversation about the potential impact this particular Super Bowl and a Super Bowl win can have for different folks participating in this year's Super Bowl, from the Seahawks and the Denver Broncos. After that, we're going to talk some NFL football, get into the Super Bowl matchups, some key matchups for the Super Bowl, talking about the impact of the weather, the potential impact. Is it overrated? Is it underrated? What do we think about the impact of weather? And then this idea of expanding the playoffs. Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? We're going to get into all of that as well. Then we're going to hit you with some NBA talk, talking about Kevin Durant, who is on fire. Kevin Durant is tearing the league up right now. Is it time when we start to reopen the conversation of who's the best player in the world? We're gonna have to debate that for a bit. The real sports guys are gonna bounce that around for a minute, see what comes out, and then we're approaching the end of an era. David Stern will be stepping down as commissioner of the NBA in the next coming weeks. We're just gonna go down memory lane and talk about things that we will remember the Stern era for. Also, give you some thoughts on Melo's 62. His 62-point game, what does it mean, where are we at with that, you know, where are we at with the Knicks situation. Also talking about some players who maybe it's time for their organization to trade them. We're going to offer some different opinions on that. And then, you know, we're going to hit you with our dog of the week. So that's the show, real nice and sweet. We're going to go deep tonight. We don't have a lot of topics, but we're going to really dig in and go deep on the ones we got. So with no further ado, we're going to get right into it, break it down. You know, I know y'all out there wondering, why are you spending so much time on the intro? Here we go. Let's get it done.
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
right.
Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Jamaica
all right.
Good.
Yeah, Jamaica's good.
Yeah.
Jamaica's very good.
A little Lennox for you. A little Lennox for you to bring us into the funky editorial. This edition of the funky editorial, we will dig in. You know, Super Bowl win changes everything. It changes how we view quarterbacks. It changes your standing in history. It changes how we view defensive players, defensive units, coaches. So, thinking about this potential Super Bowl win, whose perception is it going to change the most? I'm going to give you some names, and I want you to give me your perception of how this particular Super Bowl win or a Super Bowl win in general will affect how you view this particular person. All these folks are involved with this season, this upcoming Super Bowl, so they got a little bit on the line as far as how the real sports guys will view them going forward. The first person I'm going to throw this one out to D. Wills. It's Pete Carroll. Now, Pete Carroll's bounced around the league for quite some time before leaving and going and taking the USC job. Now, at USC, he experienced great success. Dude put in work. He took that program, put it back on the map, put it at the top of the college football world. Then, you know, stuff started getting a little grimy out there in the streets, and you know, NCAA came poking their nose around, and whether related or unrelated, Pete skipped town. Pete packed up and got out before stuff hit the fan, which is
he was
a smart
out.
Move on his part. Yeah. Now he's with the Seahawks, and he's turned around the organization really quickly. He's turned around an organization that was struggling very fast, and now he has them in a Super Bowl. So, how does this change how we view Pete Carroll if the Seahawks win the Super Bowl? D. Wills, Pete Carroll, in your mind, how does the Super Bowl win change your perception of him?
Well, I mean, you think about he had a sour taste in his mouth when he with his run with New England and the Jets, and you know went to USC, and people are very you know aware of what success he had, and his exit. His exit was you know part of some of the things that were bubbling, but I also think. You know, I also thought that he always had, much like you might think Saban might, this bad taste in his mouth about his NFL experience. And you know, I think he came back. He wasn't really running away from something as much as he realized he had some unfinished business. And he had been framed as this affable kind of guy that was fun-loving, but could he win? And he obviously at USC demonstrated he could win, at least at the college level. And kind of Seattle, where they were – you know, really trying to find themselves, he found the right organization. And so I think he's done enough to really kind of reestablish himself as a and kind of deal with some of the things that happened to him previously in the NFL. But this win would mean everything to him. I think it would mean a lot in terms of his legacy. You know, as great as Pete Carroll was at USC, you know, you think about the phenomenal record he has there. He doesn't – sometimes he doesn't get the love like the Sabins or some of these other quarter coaches get. I think this – and I think a lot of it has to do with how he approaches his coaching style. He's fun-loving. He's not this guy – he's intense. He likes to win. But I think this would do everything for him, given that he made a gutsy decision to go with a rookie quarterback who people thought were good but didn't know could make it in the NFL after getting this big-time free agent, spending all that money, but then deciding to go with this quarterback and then showing that it paid off. I think it would be huge for his career and his legacy as a coach.
Yeah, you raised some good points. He took a gamble. They brought in Matt Flynn, paid him a lot of money for a great one-game performance. And, you know, to make that gutsy move of bringing in a 5'11", third-round draft choice, that was huge. That was huge, and that was big. But, you know, and I think that goes back to Pete's philosophy. His philosophy has always been about competition.
Yes.
When you read anything about his coaching style, even at USC, it was about creating a competitive environment, an environment where the guys who started earned it. They earned their right to start, and because they earned their right to start, they had to go through a fire before even getting on the field. And,
that's right.
You know, he kept that philosophy in the pros, which is hard to do because guys have these things in the pros called paychecks. And sometimes there's pressure to play the guys who are getting the biggest paycheck. And he bucked that trend. You know, he did what needed to be done. Here's another guy I want to throw in. I'm going to have PhD come in on this one. Peyton Manning. How does this change Peyton's Super Bowl perception in your eyes? Not his overall. Oh, I'm sorry, his perception. Your perception of him and overall with a Super Bowl win. Not everybody else's, but your personal perception of Peyton. Does it change with the win? If it does, how so?
So if Tom Brady was in the Super Bowl, to me, he could not fall. His legacy could only improve. It couldn't go down, regardless if the Patriots were to win or lose. Peyton Manning is in a different situation. I think he's in a situation where he's kind of on the teeter-totter. Is that what they call that little thing in the playground,
yeah.
Teeter-totter?
Yeah.
So he's right in the middle. He's right in the middle. And if he wins, it tilts towards the side. Now we can start talking about him as one of the best quarterbacks to ever play. He can legitimately be in that conversation. And there's no buts. He only has one chip. Well, if they lose, I think that's going to put him on the other side where it's going to be less legitimate to have him in that best quarterback of all time conversation, because here's a guy, if they were to lose, who's been to the Super Bowl three times and only won once, in addition to all the playoff losses early in his career. So I think this is a key game for Peyton Manning's legacy. He had a great interview with Dan Patrick that I listened to yesterday. And, you know, Peyton has done well to steer away from this question. But if you read him between the lines, you can tell it's important to him. He's savoring this week. He knows he only has a couple of more years at best. And he also knows that it's tough. Like, a lot of things have to go right to get to the Super Bowl. And so he's there, and he wants to take advantage of it.
All right. Next up, I'm going to bounce this one back to you, D. Wills. Russell Wilson. Super Bowl win. How does that change your perception of Russell Wilson?
Well, I mean, I looked at him, and, you know, when we're doing the draft, I felt like people were getting caught up in too much of the numbers around height and size. We're close to the program, seeing him play at Wisconsin. You know, I thought this kid could be really good when he was drafted. What I've been really impressed about, you know, sometimes the professional level, even when you're a solid young person like Russell, there's pressure around the professional game, and you talked about people get paychecks. That changes the game a little bit, and, you know, how he would respond to some of those pressures. And I think in recent weeks, he's gotten a lot of criticism. I think some of it's unwarranted. I think, you know, he hasn't had a lot of talent on him, but he's done what he needed to do. But I think this for him would be, you know, I've listened to Terry Bradshaw. And like Terry Bradshaw, like Brady, you know, when their team, when they won their first Super Bowl, they had a little bit to do with it. You know, they had a whole bunch of help around them. And I think for him to win the Super Bowl, it would be kind of like that Brady. It would be like the Roethlisberger when he won. You know, they had something to do with it. They made some plays. But it would be a really good kind of stepping stone and great for him early in his career to kind of do it, particularly against a great player like Peyton Manning. And the other thing you want to say about it, you know, after the championship game, you know, the thing about he went up to Bradshaw and wanted to say, you know, how do I win this thing? That's all you need to know about Russell Wilson. He knew to go to Bradshaw and say, what do I need to do to win this? That right there says all you need to do. So for those kind of things, it's not going to change a lot for me about how it judges. I think this is a kid that can be great for a long time because he's got the kind of inner strength to do that. But, you know, I think winning this would just be a capstone to what I think is, you know, been a great first couple of years of an NFL career.
All right. I keep saying it, man. I'll keep saying it. He's a Black Brady.
Yes, he is.
You know, I mean, there's so many parallels between the way they've started. He still doesn't have a go-to receiver. I really would love to see this kid with a go-to receiver. You know, and hopefully Percy Harvin can turn into that weapon that really helps this offense kind of take that next step and add that passing element. But kid's got it. The kid's got it. All right? Bouncing back to PhD, John Fox. Now, this is a guy, as a coach, who this is his second Super Bowl. He's had success in Carolina before he got to Denver. And all he's done is, in Denver is win football games. Now, you know, oftentimes, and, you know, unfortunately, when you got Peyton Manning as your quarterback, you don't get a ton of credit for being a great coach. In your eyes, John Fox, how does this change your perception of him?
So John Fox, we're going to bring in the Roy Hibbert rule here.
Here we go. He brought out Teeter Totter and Roy Hibbert rule. Only on RSD you're going to hear those things together. This is what makes us so special. Go ahead, I want to hear this.
So you ask, what's the Roy Hibbert rule? The Roy Hibbert rule, and the citation is firmly on RSG.com, is that you have a guy who's a special performer, but he just doesn't feel like a special performer when you see him do his thing. Roy Hibbert, something about the guy. It's, you know, I don't feel comfortable with him being on an all-star team, starting on an all-star team. There's something about him, and, you know, where it's just like this is a marginal guy putting up big numbers in the playoffs. This is what I feel like about John Fox. John Fox brought a overperforming Carolina Panther team to the Super Bowl a decade ago, plus, and lost. And if he were to win today, he'd have as many championships as Bill Cowher. He'd have as many championships as a lot of guys, such as John Gruden. But we feel a lot different about John Gruden and Fox. If Fox would win and retire, Fox would not be on Monday Night Football. He probably, very likely, would not be getting a job at ESPN. I mean, maybe Fox Sports Midwest or Fox Sports Southwest.
Good
first, perhaps. There's just something about the guy. I mean, it's kind of like a little bit, who's the New York coach? The Giants coach? Coughlin.
Coughlin, yeah.
You know, but once Coughlin won two, he got a lot more sexier. So I don't think it changes it much for John Fox. If he wins, he'll have speaking engagement income for the rest of his life, but in terms of perceptions, I don't know. I doubt it.
And, okay. and you would think it, right. people would say, and I want to just ask you, do you think that people would think it's more he won because he had a Manning, but if he didn't have Manning, he's not the kind of coach that would win it. Is that more why you say that?
Yeah, I think so, which I believe is unfair. And then other people will also point out that he's got a top-notch defensive coordinator in Del Rio. Yeah, unfortunately.
Right. Fair enough. Fair enough. I think that's a fair assessment of the Roy Hibbert rule. Definitely is applicable when you talk about John Fox. Now, I want to talk about these two offensive and defensive units. Because, you know, there are historical units that go down, whether it's, you know, greatest show on turf, you know, the Ravens D, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers D of the early 2000s, the 85 Bears defense. There are certain units that when they get to the Super Bowl, it cements that unit's legacy in the annals of football history. And you have one, you have a Seahawks defense that has so much character and so much flavor to it with the Legion of Boom, that great secondary, all of the speed that they have on this defense, number one defense in the NFL. And then you have the Broncos record-setting offense. Doesn't have a nickname yet, but it'll get nicknamed soon enough. You know, so you have these great units that are facing off against each other. And, you know, for one of them, they're going to go down in history as either one of the greatest defenses ever, or they'll be, at least initiate that conversation, and one of the greatest offenses ever. So, you know, you have that element as well. For the Seahawks defense, how do you think, you know, how do you guys feel about this defense in the conversation of one of the best ever? D-Wills, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting as you were introducing it, and it just kind of hit me. What's different about even those other defenses, like a lot of times when you talk about those great defenses, there's somebody in the front seven that is – that group is kind of the dominant part of their culture, right? Ray Lewis, Mike Singletary, Dan Hampton, you know, Mean Joe Green. You kind of do it. What's interesting about this defense, and they got a great front seven, but really the strength that, you know, what makes them great sometimes, people, there's more talk about their defensive backfield, right? In as leading members, more so sometimes than the front seven. You know, usually the face of the defense is that linebacker or that D-line, Warren Sapp, but on this defense, even though they got those great front seven, they don't dominate the headlines the way the interviews in the game are mostly with the defensive backs. You notice that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's with the safety,
yep.
to the corners. You know, it's not like Ray Lewis, or it's not like, most of the Ravens is a lot with the front seven. You know, Ed Reed every once in a while, or a safety, but it's really the defensive backs are the folks who do it. So it's weird about them, but I think if they win this Super Bowl and then they have a great next year, you know, that they can get back, then I think you start talking about this defense doing some things. But I think they would have to come back next year and hold ground to be in those conversations. But it does say a lot about how great Pete Carroll is a coach. Have you ever seen a Pete Carroll team that didn't have a great defense?
Damn.
So I think
– And the thing I'd like to add is that
Dan Hampton, I mean, you lost me at Dan Hampton.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Really?
And that's the thing that I want. That's the thing I want to highlight, though, is that I think it's about the personality that they bring.
Richard Dent, can I say that? Or the Fridge?
Dan Hampton is a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Wow, I don't believe you. You have to Google it.
Google it.
I think I'm pretty sure he is. You questioning it is making me question it, because I know you know your stuff, PhD. So
no,
your question
I'm
is making me question
right
it, but
now.
I'm pretty sure.
Pro Football Hall of Famer, 2002. So nice call, D.
I don't know my stuff. I don't get no credit.
Now, My apologies.
PhD is like Bill Walsh. Of the, you know, I'm a little rough and tumble. I said other stuff. You know, Bill T is poor polish. He is that cat. You know, he gonna look good. He gonna look good at the press conference. His suit gonna be right. He gonna be tight. It's gonna be Bill Walsh-esque. But I'm in the picture.
Right, you in a little room, D, with a big piece of chicken. I hear you.
I might not get the big piece of chicken, but dang, I'm at least gonna win. There'll be like five seats in there. I'm gonna get one. I can't believe y'all would question me, especially since I'm in the Midwest. I would know that. All right, so, my point is, so many of those other defenses are led by Suggs. You know, I have such a dominant front person that's, like, really dominating the headlines. You don't really see that with the Seattle defense, even though they got a great front seven.
What I wanted to add was that I think with this particular group, the reason that is because the personalities are in the secondary, you know. Yeah. And when you had those other defenses, you're talking about the Bears, where you got Richard Dent up front, you got McMichael, you got, you know, Richard Dent, the Fridge. You got Singletary. You know, you got a lot of personalities that jump out at you. Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs. You know, you got those guys in that Ravens defense that jump out you. John Lynch, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp on those Tampa Bay teams. Those guys have personalities that jump out at you. I couldn't name a Seattle Seahawks member of their front seven. Offhand, I couldn't, and I dare one of you guys to.
Red Bryant.
You got Averill.
Yeah. Arvo, Red Bryant, Bennett.
Yeah, but they're not household names.
Marcus.
Yeah.
Marcus, would you like for us to continue?
No, you're good. You proved your point.
See, I told you that Bill Walsh on the line now. You don't ask the question you had to answer.
Sorry, man.
You're good. You proved your point.
You know he's been studying the roster.
Right. Don't want to be that guy. I mean, Devon was helping me. He was hyping me, though. You know.
Yeah, he was. It's all good. But back to my point. My point being is that, you know, the Earl Thomases, the Cam Chancellors, the Richard Shermans, that's what you think about when you think about this defense. And, you know, that's their secondary. That's where the personalities are. And those are the people that get the headlines because of the way they play. Because it's so rare that secondaries have such an impact, and they are the personality, because usually they don't have that stick your nose in there and knock people out kind of mentality. And this secondary is unique in that way where, you know, they're just as much about big hits as they are about the pick six, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So transitioning, PhD, let's talk about this Broncos offense and its place historically. We know about the record-setting stats and numbers that they put up. How does a Super Bowl win solidify this offense in your mind among some of the greatest offenses? When you're talking about the Buffalo Bills, who never won a Super Bowl, but, again, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, you know, James Lofton, that crew was one of the great offenses. And usually offenses don't get a lot of credit because rarely do great offenses win it all. You know, the last one I can think of was the greatest show on turf, where they went in as a great offense and won it all. I mean, just took it all. The last time we had a record-setting offense in the Super Bowl that was really kind of on a historical level was the undefeated Patriots, when they came in with Moss and Brady and Welker and those guys, and then they lost to the Giants. So how does this impact how you will view this Denver Broncos offense? And they need a nickname. That's the other thing. They got to get a nickname.
Cheap shot.
Right, the receiver. Belichick didn't even give him a name. He just said the receiver.
The receiver is dirty.
He said the receiver hit to lead, yeah. So, Marcus, I think you covered it all, really. And I think you did it well. You mentioned that. So if the Broncos don't win, they're going to be mentioned like the Patriots that went 16-0, that had that great offense, that had all the records with Moss and Brady throwing, but they didn't win. You're going to talk about the Buffalo Bills, who had a high-powered offense but didn't win. Or they can be like the greatest show on turf, who made it to the Super Bowl twice and they won at least once. So, essentially, I think that's what it is right there. If they win, it adds credence to, you know what, your defense can be okay if your offense is phenomenal.
And if I could add, I would say that it's hard
well, you're already
to
going.
Rate the offense. Yeah, well, that's what I figured I would say if I could add and keep moving. I figured you let me go out the door, you know, kind of like J.R. Smith. I'm just going to go out the door until you catch me. What I would say is it's hard to rate these offenses because of the way the rules allow them to run free. When you think about the great 49 offenses or even Jim Kelly's offense early on, and you think about the rules that were when Marino's offenses, when you think about when these players had to play and make plays, when defense had a lot more freedom to disrupt routes, to hit people, and do that, and they still performed at a high level. I think the only thing that hurts offenses today is because the rules play against them. And if you think about it, Seattle has decided to forget the rules. They take the penalty. Seattle is the most penalized team in the secondary. So what they've decided to do is, at the end of the day, you're not going to score. You're just going to have to call a flag on us. And they've just decided to play that way. But most defenses get scared to play that way, which allow for these offenses to look even better. So that's the ranking's got to be understanding those changing rules.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, we're going to transition. All right. Now, the weather. Let's get to talking about the weather. Now, I want you guys' opinion. Is the weather overrated or underrated? Each take a turn. Give me your opinion whether it's overrated, underrated, and why. I'm going to start with PhD. Overrated, underrated on the weather?
I think it's overrated. I think it's under.
It's an overrated.
I'll just say this. I think the weather is going to play a big role. And I think it is as big as what they've been talking about. So does that mean underrated or overrated, Mark?
If you think I think people are saying right now that the weather, people are making a big deal about the weather. And so
okay.
I think you're saying that maybe it's on point. Maybe people should be making a big deal about
that's
the weather.
Right.
You do think it's going to have an impact, but you don't think it's overrated. And you might think it's underrated. You might think it's going to actually have more of an impact than people are getting credit for, if you allow me to paraphrase.
I think you nailed it, man, because guess what? It's cold. It really is. It's, I just walked to the mailbox without a pair of gloves on, and my fingers start tingling, okay, in 45 seconds. Now, the wind chill is negative 20 here in Cleveland, but I think it's cold, man. That football going to get heavy, and so I think it's important. Sorry, Marcus, I just butchered your question, but those are just my thoughts, ladies and gentlemen, just my thoughts.
Hey, you all good, man. You all good. Because I agree. And it is cold. And if you don't live in the Midwest, the polar vortex is real. It is a real thing. And it hurts. It physically hurts you.
Oh,
this is round two of the polar vortex. I never want to see one again. I never want to see one of these things again. Seriously. D-Will, is the impact of the weather being overrated or underrated?
Oh, I don't even know where to begin. It's people. The PhD's answer would tell you how cold it is because he's so shocked. He's still trying to overcome the weather. The part of the weather, football players are football players. The weather's more of an issue for the fans. The key is everybody's been talking about is wind. The wind will help Seattle. if there's a little bit more wind in that stadium with the new design, I don't know how it's going to be affected. I think the wind will play more of an issue for Denver. Would it? You know, the prediction is, I think, what was it, like 25 degrees or something like that or whatever. I mean, it's going to be cold, but football, these football players have played it. That's not going to be a big issue for them. It's going to be the wind. It's going to be the big – so if it's windy, then I think it's going to have a major impact on the Denver offense and less on Seattle's offense because they're trying to establish a run. They can keep moving the chains. It'll allow for the Seattle defensive backs to play a little more aggressively on the ball and be a little bit more physical with it. So I think the part of whether that matters is really the wind.
All right. I got to agree with you. You know, I think it's, you know, and I said this last week, I hope it dumps snow on them. You know, people complaining about it. It is what it is, man. I hope snow falls all over this game. I hope it's just snowing and it's snowing and it's snowing. Just for something different, you know,
Yeah.
You know, I like to see, let's see you guys overcome it. Let's see how it really does impact the game. You know, I think the media is just mad because it's cold and they got to be there and they want to be somewhere where it's nice. You know, it's spoiled. It's spoiled. Mainstream media is spoiled.
Think about the Super Bowl highlights we watch a lot, the historic ones. They're all like the Green Bay and the Giants one when it was cold. Like, think about the highlights of the people we focus on. There's a lot of Super Bowls where they breathing cold air. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's talking about
mm-hmm.
historical things, but you look at the early days, most of those championship games were in cold weather. And, you know, and we talk about those as the greatest games ever. Now all of a sudden, because people can't wear shorts, it's not going to be a great game. Get out of here.
Exactly. I'm with you on that. We're right here. Now, another idea that's being bounced around by the NFL Competition Committee and the Commissioner Goodell is the idea of expanding the playoffs. How do you feel about this idea, D. Wills, adding one more team in each conference?
And I was making a note on this. What I would have explored before this was getting away from the divisional design and having some kind of conference design where people just rotated and played, and then you just took the top six teams, you know, rather than the plan to say just take the top, reshuffle the deck, and take the top two teams, because if you have a division, then the division winner should go to the playoffs. But I think my first step would have been look at some kind of conference strategy where you could rotate when people play and try to do something like that. If not, I don't mind adding more teams to the playoffs. I think it makes it more interesting the more you can keep fans in. And the quality of play, unlike, you know, basketball or some other sports, won't go down very much. I mean, I think there's not that much difference between these teams who might be in the playoff run. You know, if you think about this year, Pittsburgh, Arizona, they would have played well in the playoffs. They might have even won a couple games in the playoffs. So I think it's good for their fan base and keeping the energy there. You know, I don't mind it at all. But I probably would have looked at, is there a way to do a conference framework away from the divisional framework that would allow for you to just take the top six teams? Because the problem is a team like Arizona right now should be in the playoffs. But it'd be unfair to not have a divisional winner go to the playoffs. So I think if you had a conference framework where teams just rotated and played differently within that conference framework, then you just take the top six teams. That's probably how I would look at it.
Okay. What are your thoughts, PhD?
I like it as long as they don't add an additional round. So I think if you add a seventh team in each division, I'm sorry, in each conference, it makes the end of the season even more relevant. You have more playoff races. I think one way you can do it is instead of giving the top two seeds a bye, just give the top seed a bye, and the two seed needs to play opening weekend.
Yeah, I actually like it. At first, I wasn't very keen on it. I just don't like – sometimes it just – you know, I think sometimes more is less is more, you know, and, you know, when you have the NBA framework where almost half of the teams make the playoffs, and the NFL, I feel like, had it right with their playoff format. There was a premium on those spots. You know, there are only six in each conference, 12 out of 32 teams makes it. That's a pretty exclusive group, and that's a pretty big deal when you get in. Adding a seventh, I don't think dilutes that for me. I think it enhances it in a couple of ways. I think you can keep the divisional format. What happens is once the playoffs start, all the division championship does is guarantee you get in. You win your division, you get in. Now, at that point, though, it doesn't guarantee you get the host, which it does now. Once you get in, though, what it does guarantee is that you get to play a game. Then, you know, you take the other seven teams or six teams and you rank them out by record. So, you know, now the seeding goes by, you know, record rather than who won a division. So, and it, I think it also raises the premium on having that, getting that one seed. You know, if you get that one seed, you're the only team that gets that week off. You know, and that adds another layer of competitive, of competition that will play out. And maybe you don't have teams pulling all their starters, you know, last week of the season. You know, maybe some teams are still fighting for that one seed right up until the end, instead of saying, well, you know, we're going to have a home game in the first round anyway, you know, so what's the big deal?
And, so, Marcus, another thing that it does is it keeps week 16 of a week of a 17-week season relevant. And for me, that's fantasy football. And, again, I just
– you play to win the game.
Let them know. Let them know. Yes, sir. You play to win the game is absolutely correct. And, you know, that's an important point. You know, it keeps everything relevant. It keeps folks engaged all the way through to the end, which I think is a plus. Now, if they go to eight, I don't know. I don't know if there's eight teams in each. To me, that's getting a little bit, again, now you're at that point of where half the teams in the league make the playoffs. You know, you got 16 teams out of 32 making the playoffs. And all you got to do is be in the top half of a league that already promotes parity. I think then you start to water down the product. But I think when you get to seven, I think you're enhancing what's already good about it without overdoing it or overkilling it. Because, again, in the NFC, you get a team like the Arizona Cardinals now. They're in the playoffs, a 10-win team. And, you know, they're always a 10 or 11, sometimes 11-win teams who don't make the playoffs because they didn't win their division. So this gets those teams engaged and involved. And usually, in most scenarios, you're adding another good team rather than a team that's a poor-performing team. So I think it's a plus all the way around. So you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSU, Renegade Radio. We're talking NFL football. We're about to dig into some of the Super Bowl matchups that we think are going to have a major impact on how the game plays out. I'm going to first start with my man, D. Wills. D. Wills, some of the matchups that you're looking forward to in this game, do you think this matchup is going to have a tremendous impact on determining who wins this game? Give me one matchup.
I think it's the Denver defensive line against the Seattle offensive line. You know, if Seattle can control the ground game and get Marshawn Lynch going and keep Peyton on the sidelines and not give him any possessions, that's going to be problems for Denver because it allows Seattle's defense to be in attack mode. And so I think that's the matchup right there is really, you know, that Seattle offensive line against that Denver defensive line.
Okay. All right. And I think that's a big matchup, too, because getting pressure on Peyton is going to be key. It's going to be very key. PhD, what matchup do you like to have a major impact in this particular game? All right. I'll go. I'm looking at the matchup between Seattle's run game and Denver's front seven. If Seattle's able to run the ball successfully, that's going to allow Russell Wilson to do what he needs to do, where he doesn't have to do too much. You know, he's not at that point in his career where he has, one, the weapons, and two, I don't think they have the steam right now for him to really go out and chuck it all over the field in a game with a guy like a Peyton Manning. So I think that balance between the run and the pass has to be there just to create those easier opportunities for, one, the Seattle receivers, who by no means are game breakers, and Russell Wilson. So I'm looking at the Seattle offensive line and their run blocking versus Denver's front four, front seven, at the key matchup. PhD, what do you got for your matchup, your key matchup for this Super Bowl?
The Seattle defensive backfield versus the receivers for Denver. I tell you what, man, Denver's like pick your poison. They pretty much like Denzel, Alonzo, and training day. How you want this, Jake? I'm surgical with it. I mean, you want my tight end to come at you? Okay, you want me to give it to you, the tight end? Which tight end? Because Tammy been playing well in the playoffs too, okay? We got three legitimate receivers we can throw at you in Decker, in Welker, and in Thomas. You know, our running backs can catch the ball out the backfield. So, to me, man, that's the biggest matchup because Richard Sherman can only catch one guy. He can only cover one guy. In the words of my man from Varsity Blues, I'm just one man. So that's all that Sherman is. So if you want to put him on Thomas, okay, fine. What you going to do against Decker and what you going to do against Welker?
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that. That's going to be key. You know, that secondary is going to have to earn its nickname. It's going to have to earn its keep. It's going to have to really defend its reputation because the Denver crew is coming for him and it's coming to cause some problems. L.O.B., baby. You don't know how many people thought that was something else, a gang or something. They just didn't know. They just didn't know. All right? So that'll do it for our NFL talk. We're going to transition, but first, we got to pay some bills. Again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. Here you go. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio brought to you by Resistance Digital. We're going to get talking about the NBA right now. All right, the NBA season is in full effect. We're in the throes of January, heading into the All-Star break. We're about halfway through the season, halfway through the schedule, and things are starting to heat up. In particular, you have Kevin Durant, who is on fire. 11 straight 30-point games, 30-plus point games, including a 51-point game, a 46, and a couple 40-point games, one 46, I think another one 44,
wow,
something like
winning.
That. Exactly. So,
wow,
first off,
winning.
We need to have a conversation. Is Kevin Durant your MVP as of right now? D. Wills.
Yeah, I think, I mean, given, you know, the injury to Russell Westbrook and the way in which he's really stepped up in his game, he's the leading candidate, also the best nickname he doesn't like, the Slim Reaper. The show he put on last night, I mean, we can't even talk about the game winner. You got to talk about the other shots he hit before the game winner. He is just elevating his game and being aggressive in ways I was hoping he would be. And he's growing in so many different ways before our eyes. So, yeah, I think he's the leading candidate. And he strikes fear in everybody when he steps on the court. You know, it's like you can tell people are like, man, I hope he's just cold tonight. They're just hoping he going to miss. And he's just killing folks. So I think he's the leading person coming out the gate, given what he's trying to make up for.
Okay. PhD, is Durant your guy or what?
Man, so This is tough for me because, you know, I like LeBron James more than a little bit. Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. Now, I'm going to take this a step further. I'm going to really, I'm gonna really put the screws to you guys. I'm going to really put the screws to you guys.
One.
Is Kevin Durant the best player in the world today?
No.
I'm about to wave my I'm waving my Mutombo finger right now. if you can sense, I got a long finger going back and forth. I'm waving that Mutombo like I slapped it off the glass. No, he's not.
No. Okay. So what does he need to do? Where does he need to go?
Well, let me add this in, and then I'll take a step back. You know, they're making the comparisons between him and LeBron, and all the legitimate comparisons are on the offensive end of the court. But where the separation comes in with LeBron, which makes LeBron the best player in the world, is his impact on both ends of the court and all aspects of the game. And, you know, LeBron is a defensive player of the year candidate, as well as he could be an offensive player of the year candidate, as well as he could be an MVP. Where I think Kevin will need to continue to grow, and he's made some strides this year. I mean, you know, really learning to use his length on defense. He doesn't have to be as dominant as LeBron, but understand that he has size, he has ways that he can affect the game on defensive end. I think he's still learning how to do that, whereas LeBron is much more a superior player. You can put him on, you know, he's literally played five different guys on the defensive end of the floor, and what he does in terms of creating offense from defense, that's something that Kevin doesn't have in his game yet. Whereas LeBron can affect on the offensive end, and so they compare all the statistics around field goal percentage, efficiency, all that stuff on the offensive end. But LeBron can create offense from defense and create stops in ways that Kevin is yet to grow to do that.
Okay. Okay. PhD, your assessment, or are you gonna let the testimony stand?
I'm reading it again. I think LeBron James is the best player this year.
I think that's right. He said, I got to go back to Cleveland for you. Go through your thing. Because you do your people outside the window yelling at you. I think you're crazy.
Yeah. I got to redig, man. I tell you what. LeBron James is shooting 58% from the field right now.
Yeah.
He's shooting just as well as Durant from three, roughly 38, 39% from three. So he's pretty much close to 40%. And he's not shooting nearly as much. He's shooting, last time I checked yesterday, he's got about 16 field goal attempts per game, and Durant is putting up significantly more than that, I mean roughly 20. So, I mean, that's a difference of four for those that were unsure. So, it's tough for me to say this because, to me, it goes back to that year Karl Malone won the MVP, and everybody knew Jordan was the better player. 97, 98, one of those two years, and Malone had slightly better numbers than what he normally did. But that didn't mean that Mike was not the better player. He was not the most – he was still the most valuable player to his team. And so, you know, Mike had went – they had went 72-10 the year before. And so now all of a sudden they're not winning as much, this and that. Pippen's out. I see a lot of comparisons to what's going on right now in the Miami Heat. Wade is, I don't know what's going on with Dwayne Wade. I think they're trying to conserve his minutes, but they're bringing this cat off the bench. So when you weigh all that in, I can't do it. I tried to do it, Marcus, and I just didn't feel good for the last 4 minutes. So I had sick to my stomach.
Hey, I understand. You know, it's, you know, the greats supposed to clash at the top, you know. And KD right now I would say he's closing the gap, but it's still LeBron's world. And D-Wills, I think you hit it on the head. LeBron has the same impact he has offensively as he does defensively. He impacts the game the same at an extremely high level, might I say, on both ends of the floor, where I think KD right now is just a dominant offensive force. He's a solid defender, but offensively, goodness gracious, he can do a whole lot, you know. But I don't think – I think he will win MVP just because he is having an amazing season. Is he the best player in the world? No.
What I want to add, too, is that, you know, in all the things that we said about LeBron, I think it's true, and we're not going to debate it, but he still has, you know, Bosh there carrying a load. If you look at Oklahoma, you know, they have some people carried every night, but it's like Benny and the Jets. You know, these cats are like, sometimes it's KD and the altar boys. You know, they cats just don't step up. And so he carrying it every night in a way that LeBron at least gets some reprieve, you know, when Wade is healthy enough to pull his Ginobili moment, or Bosh is doing it every night. Bosh is still a premier player in the league. He got him going. So there are moments where he gets some help somewhere where I see KD not doing it for most valuable player, you know, not best player, which is different. You know, most valuable player, you know, KD gets hurt, they in all kinds of other stuff, you know.
Me, it's about how you look at the MVP award. You know, sometimes, you know, I think we get it. It's like this in all sports. Is it the best player or is it the guy that had the best season? Now, again, yeah. as you said, PhD, LeBron is leading the league in true shooting percentage. All right? That's an advanced stat that combines your free throw percentage, your three-point percentage, and your field goal percentage. He's shooting 65%, 65.9, best in the league. Now, Kevin Durant is third. All right, KD is third. But, I mean, it's almost effortless. It seems like he's not trying, but he's so efficient. He gets stuff done. I mean, he's getting stuff done on less touches. It's hard to argue
but he can do that because he has other people creating space and opportunities, and he does some stuff on his defensive end that allows him to be efficient. But having a guy like Bosh and some other, you know, if Kevin's not running the offense, sometimes Kevin taking a contested shot is better than the cat got the open shot. That's the kind of team he got. You know what I'm saying?
It's better than Perkins with an open shot every – all 25 minutes Perkins is on the floor. KD contested is better than Perkins taking any type of shot.
Yes. They basically playing when he's – and Perkins get mad, but when Perkins on the floor, he's a liability. He's like – it's like 4-on-5 on offense. You know, so his efficiency going to go down because he has to take more contested shots because he got fewer cats on the floor who can actually create offense for themselves or do anything versus what LeBron is allowed to have the game come to him a little bit. On top of he gets some easy ones because of the defense to offensive transition. So we do have to acknowledge what allows him to be efficient.
Okay. And just to jump into my stats, my advanced stats, KD is leading the league in win shares.
I was just going to ask you, and perhaps you can share that to the listeners and us, what website do you go to find win shares? Because it took me about 10 minutes and I was unsuccessful.
BasketballReference.com.
Oh,
BasketballReference.com.
They will help you.
Yeah,
all
you can get lots of advanced statistics there. They got it all for you, so it's a great place to go if you want to kind of really dig in to some stats in a different kind of way. And there's some new stats that are out there that are interesting that, you know, I haven't had a chance to get into yet because I'm busy. But when the off-season hits, you know, I'm going to be looking for some new stats to help me understand the game a little bit differently. But, yeah, KD's number – I mean, he's also number one in offensive win shares, and he's number six in defensive win shares. So he's doing it on both ends. Again, it's his impact as pronounced as LeBron's. The stats say so, but the eyeball test says no. So that's where I'm at. I think KD is the MVP. LeBron's still the greatest in the world. KD's closed the gap a bit, but he's still got a way to go before it's really who's the man kind of a conversation. Before it goes Nas, Jay-Z in the early 2000s, KD's got a way to go. He's got a way to go. He's got to put out some more hot albums, have some more hot years before we go full out. We need to see who's got the ether and the takeover in their pocket. So that's where I'm going with that. I don't know about you guys.
Moving along.
David Stern, his run as NBA commissioner is going to come to a close in the next couple of weeks. Now, he has overseen the league through its biggest growth period. And, you know, it's a growth period that I don't think was foreseen before he came in. And, I mean, that's obviously evident when you think about the Spirits of St. Louis, for example. The ABA team that was sold for the right to TV money, and now they're making the owners who don't even own a team in the NBA anymore get $300 million per year
right.
NBA TV money for doing absolutely nothing.
St. Louis Spirits.
Right. You know, and they get they do absolutely nothing and get $300 million. Wow. So the league has seen ridiculous growth. It has truly become an international game with, you know, you have players from all over the world playing. You have leagues all over the world that are viable leagues that provide opportunities for players to go over and play professionally for good money. You know, David Stern has overseen all of that. Saw the league through Michael Jordan's career, has seen it and guided it through the time after Mike and then the rise of Kobe and Shaq and the Lakers and now LeBron and the Heat. And there have been a lot of great things that have happened. The media deals that he's struck to get the NBA is probably, to me, one of the most progressive leagues as far as how it markets itself, how it puts itself out there, how it offers its fans tons of information on what's going on the court, off the court. It's been at the forefront. Even when you go back to shows like, you know, Inside Stuff, you know, that were marketed to kids, but they gave kids an inside look and a connection with their players off the court. You know, the NFL has never had a show like that. Baseball has never had a show like that where you got to get to know guys in a different way, get to know the players in a different way. And those are things that David Stern oversaw during his tenure. So I just wanted to kind of, as it closes, you know, as D. Stevie begins to step down, what are some things that you guys are going to remember from the David Stern era of the NBA? PhD, you go first.
The salaries and just how you have, from the early 80s, Magic Johnson getting a $1 million contract was a big deal. To now the league minimum being for veterans being five times that amount, actually six times that amount this year. So the owners' pockets got fat. The fans, us, we got a better product, and also the players also benefited a great deal.
Okay. Yeah, the money is excellent. The league is not hurting for cash at all. You know, when Kobe gets assigned a $48 million contract, you know, that's a pretty big deal for a dude who's 36, 37 years old.
Right.
You know, player contracts are you know, you get guys like Roy Hibbert who, you know, they have an impact, but they don't quite pass the eyeball test. He's making $14 million a year. You know, he's getting max money. Brooke Lopez is getting max money. The highest paid player in the league is Joe Johnson, folks.
What's Joe Jackson? What's Joe Johnson's nickname? Marcus, you gave it a few summers ago.
ISO Joe? Or Or the expiring Joe Johnson's expiring contract, that one.
That's right. Every time I see him, I think about that.
Hey, it's almost time. It's almost time. I think we got one more year, and then that's what he'll be known as, is Joe Johnson's expiring contract. He's still got a couple more years of ISO Joe, but Joe Johnson's expiring contract is coming up real fast. But yeah, you know, the money is good. The money is good. And David Stern, again, he has it so that, you know, NBA players are very recognizable. More people probably know Blake Griffin's face. You know, he's a top 10 guy. Before Richard Sherman snapped out, even though he's probably arguably the best corner in the league, nobody knew who he was. If he walked down the street, you know, I'd say 80% of people in America wouldn't be able to point out Richard Sherman. I'd probably say a higher percentage of folks would be able to point out Blake Griffin, you know. And I think they're comparable in their standing as far as being a star in their league. He's done a lot as far as helping players market themselves, helping the league market itself. D. Wills, what will you remember David Stern's tenure?
Part of it is David Stern realizing that part of being a commissioner is being the custodian of the league, and that sometimes means not leading based on what the public opinion might bring. But at the same time, that expansion is a sophisticated type of opportunity. We talk about it being a global game, but what Stern did, part of how the NBA did it was they first deployed coaches to do clinics with other coaches around the world in these different areas. They created, like they have in Africa, these future programs where they do this player development at young ages, and they began to develop that way in very sophisticated ways that then allowed for when the Dream Team was on the scene, create this moment for this kind of explosion of this kind of international player. But the seeds for that have been planted early on by having coaches doing clinics in Europe and doing some of the things that helped to lay the groundwork for strengthening the European League and other leagues around the world. And so, you know, that type of, you know, that expansion is a sophisticated effort. Sometimes you think about the NFL trying to get into London. It seems so clunky. You know what I'm saying? People criticize it. Can it work? It doesn't feel as sophisticated as Stern understanding the cultural dynamic, the nuances, how to get into markets, and that he sometimes pushed against things that on the surface created pushback. I remember the whole thing around the dress. I was one of the few things about, you know, all the stuff we looked at. But what that did for beginning to shape, you know, you see the way cats come to the podium now. They come with some style, but they create some whole different dynamic. And so, you know, all these different things, I think he's understanding that being a commissioner means being a custodian, and there sometimes you're not happy. He is the original line stepper. He is the original. He did it before Goodell. But it seemed like he did it with style, where Goodell is kind of clunky. You know, he kind of slides across the line. He slides across the line. You're like, did he just step across the line? Like, you don't even know. It's like watching somebody shoot a three-pointer and they got to go in close to see if he's on the line. That is where, you know, when Goodell shoots it, you're like, oh, he's all on the line. He over the line. You know, you complaining, you getting the T on him. Whereas it's always seemed like Stern slid across the line. And before you know it, then he moved the line. He moved the line. He slid across the line. You're like, did the line move? You didn't even know the line move because he didn't only step, but then he moved the line. That's how smooth he was at times, and I think that was part of what he believed to be being a commissioner.
And on top of that, on top of being able to slide across the line, being able to move the line, then when you waited for him to slide and you watched and you waited for him to move the line, when you was watching for those moves, because those are his go-to moves, he made you think the line was somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? Like, he would go on the other side of the line and make you think, I'm supposed to be over here. And you start thinking, maybe he didn't cross the line. Maybe this is the right side of the line. Maybe he's supposed to be on this side of it. You know what I mean? He made you question where the line was to begin with. So, you know, that's David Stern, though, man. And the things I remember, you know, are, you know, the genius ways in which he, again, he figured out how to market players. And he allowed players, and I think in more ways than I think any other league, he embraced who players were and ran with it. When you talk about Michael Jordan's, when you talk about the Allen Iversons, you know, taking what a guy is and just running with that, you know, and saying, look, we're going to roll with this, and this is who he is. We can use it. We can market it. It resonates with a certain population, and we're going to go with that. You know, we don't have to always pander to a certain sect of society. You know, we can be as diverse as our league is. And that's the other thing, the diversity with that exists within the NBA is unlike no other league, and I think that gets overlooked so much. Mm-hmm. Having African-American coaches in the NBA is not a big deal at all. Why? Because there are a ton. You know, having African-American executives in the NBA is not a big deal because they have a ton, you know, and the
That's
NBA
right.
has, you know, female referees, female executives. It has made a lot of progress, more progress than any other sports league, as far as breaking down some of those diversity barriers. And that all happened under David Stern's watch. You know, it evolved. They moved way beyond the white boys club, the old boys club, a long time
mm-hmm.
ago. Whereas
mm-hmm.
I think the NFL still has to kind of evolve a little bit further, where baseball kind of has to evolve a little bit further in those areas. The NBA has long, long been more advanced in those particular areas as far as diversity goes, in leadership positions, and also in the style in which players are presented and players are, you know, players can be. You know, everybody doesn't have to be Peyton Manning. You know, every quarterback is trying to be like Peyton Manning. Every coach is trying to be like Bill
That's
Belichick.
Right.
Everybody, you know, and there isn't that openness to different styles, different ways of being successful. Whereas in the NBA, you can really be, you know, yourself for the most part. You know, you can have, you know, a LeBron, you know, exist in the same league within a 10-year span as an Allen Iverson. You know, very different types of players, and you can juxtapose those two guys with a Tim Duncan, who is also very different, you know. And, again, the NBA allows guys to be themselves and figures out a way to make guys who have personality be marketable. You know, Blake Griffin, you know, these guys, they can be marketed because of who they are, but they don't have to fit into a box, so to speak. They just got to play well.
Yeah, and I would add that, you know, I love it. I mean, you really – and that, to me, is really the – I mean, you just laid out the legacy of David Stern. When you talked about the makeup of the league from coaches and executives, and even thinking about what just happened here with Richard Sherman, that's not a big – that wouldn't be constructed in the same way that has been kind of set up in the NFL. And, again, people juxtaposing him against not even understanding his background to being, why is he not more like Peyton? Whereas you're right, in the game in the NFL, I mean, in the NBA, there are all those characters, and they're smart and crazy. I mean, someone like Dennis Rodman is still seen as having a high basketball IQ, even though he's running around North – even though he running around North Korea – trying to do something.
I still have. I don't think he knows what he's trying to get done.
I don't think he was. He's going to end up in. He's going to end up on something. But
these
anyway.
Guys have left their family. They have left their family. Really? Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Does he know
right.
what it means?
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not.
It's getting the people going.
Yes. Exactly, exactly. On point, on point.
No one knows what it means. They're leaving their family. All right. But, yeah, I think you captured Stern. We got to drop that tape, man. That one is – that was textbook game changer. I think we got to drop that somewhere out there in the sphere to capture that moment. We should send that to David Stern. He might
right, see if we can get him on. He gonna have some time on his hands.
We're going to get him on.
But, you know, the league is in a great place right now. It has a ton of talent that's in its prime. When you talk about LeBron, Kevin Durant, you know, Carmelo Anthony, you know, all of the guys that we look to as the top players in the league, they're in their prime, and it's in a very good place. And I think it's also in a place where a lot of ownership has figured out how to better run teams. You know, there's still some teams that are a mess, but, you know, the blueprint has been laid out of how you get good and how you stay good. And, you know, a lot of teams are you know, trying to go about their own way of figuring out how to get to that point. So, you know, he's leaving the league in a very good spot. So, you know, hats off to David Stern and his career with the NBA. He's taking it to new heights. Hopefully Adam Silver and Mark Tatum, who will be the new deputy commish, can take it even further and take it beyond. You know, there's still some things that I think, you know, again, I'm still – expansion is great, but I think at this point, you know, less is more. And, you know, if they broke down the league into, you know, two 12-team conferences, I'd love that. I'd love that. You know, there's some markets that we could get rid of. But, you know, it's all about the dollar sign. You know, cash moves everything around me. So I want to get into something with you guys, all right? Play a little game called Cut, Bait, or Wait, all right? Is it time to cut bait on these guys, or do we want to wait and see where things go? All right, we got about 10 minutes. We can play this. Then we got to get into the dog of the week. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're in the midst of NBA talk. We're going to talk about there's some players out there who have been rumored to be on the block or possibly leaving their teams in the near future. Trade deadline's coming up. You know, All-Star time is always a great time for deals to happen, deals to get done. So I'm going to throw out a name. I want you guys to give me whether or not you cutting bait or you going to wait. First name we got, Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin's name has been tossed around in some trade proposals that are out there, one for Carmelo Anthony. You've heard his name mentioned in some other trade scenarios. This summer his name got tossed around as far as trying to bring Dwight Howard to the Clippers. What do you guys think? If you're the Clippers, are you cutting bait or are you going to wait and keep Blake? D. Wills.
If you don't believe he has the will and commitment to develop his low post game, if you just don't think it's in it, if Doc has told you that, then you cut it. Because I think
what are you doing? What are you doing? What do you believe? That's what I want to know. What do you
believe? Then I'm gonna say cut him because I just don't think I don't see it.
Okay.
If I Carmelo or something like that, because what the Clippers need, they need somebody who can score in the box. They need him to, and Carmelo can give you that. He can give you in the short, skinny post. He can give it to you down on the block, and he can stretch it out. If I can move and get somebody like that, a superstar who can get some baskets close to the rim and get the fouls with somebody like Doc Rivers coaching, then I cut him.
Okay. So you all in on Blake Carmelo. You'd make that deal, huh?
Yeah, I will because you got a person. I think Melo still got wheels on it. I trust Doc as a coach. And the Clippers' problem, if you watch them in the playoffs, is that when you need somebody to get baskets and you got to get somebody who can get down post and draw the double team, you know, you were hoping that Blake could grow and be that guy. But, you know, other than Chris Paul, I mean, Chris Paul was probably some of the best, sometimes their best post player down there. And it was their guards. And I think you need a big or someone who has size who can get you easy baskets close to the rim and draw double teams. And if Blake is not willing to develop his skills like that, you got to cut him. And I think you got Doc can manage all the other personalities.
Okay. So you PAZ, what's your thoughts on that? Devon just traded Blake Griffin for Carmelo Anthony.
So I also go cut bait. But Devon, if you're gonna make that move, you gotta make Carmelo sign a rider in the contract that he cannot dribble more than 5 dribbles without either shooting or passing. And the only time he could do that is if Chris Paul is out of the game. That's the only way it works.
What I would say is I trust there's very few coaches who can get him to do what he needs to do. And Doc Rivers is one of those coaches, and because he has a proven record. And so, and he's worked with personalities like that. So I don't have a problem with that because I know Doc was going to do what he needs to do with him to make him do what he needs to do.
Because here's the thing. If Carmelo goes to the Clippers and does what he does in New York, it'll look just like the Lakers with Kobe Bryant and Steve Nash. For Steve Nash to be effective, he has to be the primary ball handler. And when that happens, he makes everybody around him better. A healthy Steve Nash. Well, that's the same thing with Chris Paul. Everybody around him gets better when he's the primary ball handler. How will that work? I love Doc Rivers, man. But, I mean, that's like pulling a rabbit out of his woo. You know, I mean, that's just not going to happen to get Carmelo to
Hold up. You watch Carmelo's been one of the best players in the international game with other players, and Carmelo doesn't play like that when he plays with other cats. I think Chris Paul and Doc, you see Carmelo play in other places on the Olympic team. He doesn't play like that when he's playing around cats who command him
strong
to play a different
point.
Way.
It's a strong
point. He doesn't
point,
play like
man. That. It's a strong point. And, I mean, you pulled that card out. It's a little bit unfair because you know that I love – I mean, right now on my screen right now, I'm looking at the FIBA World Championship for 2014. So you brought me over to the other side. Well done.
Okay. All right. So we got some more names. We got to get into
Mark the tape game changer.
Consider it Mark. All right. The next name on the list, Kevin Love. All right. I'm going to start with you, PhD. Cut bait or wait?
You wait because he's the best thing Minnesota's had since Kevin Garnett, and they're not going to get anything close to him in return. Even if you got three borderline all-stars or two all-stars and a borderline third, I just don't think you let him go, man, because you've got enough pieces around him. I would package the young pieces that they have to get a solid veteran, a couple of veterans that can work with him opposed to giving away your centerpiece.
Okay. All right, but what if you know he might leave? He might leave. So then what?
How many years does he have left on this deal right now?
I think this is his last year. I think he can opt out after this year.
Yeah.
Ew.
So this trade deadline is your last opportunity to guarantee that you get something back for his services.
You
there's no guarantee you're gonna keep him.
You cut bait
okay.
Because if I'm Kevin Love. I'm not going back to Minnesota. Good luck trying to get him go back.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with this polar vortex rolling around. I'm out. You know, I love L.A. So you cutting bait on Love with the possibility he'll opt out. D. Wills, what's your assessment?
I feel like that unless I can get him in the room with Prince and convince him, we cut bait. You know, Prince can sing something, maybe get Apollonia in the room, somebody like that. We're going to cut bait.
Where's Apollonia? 50 now? I don't think she's moving the needle no more, man.
I'm pretty sure Apollonia looks good. Get more Zay in there singing, something like that. She's something for him.
Right, that was a 12-year-old divide talking about she looked good.
Right. Granny 6 in the house.
Chrysler Arena. Yeah, she had the camera saw. Chrysler Arena. I digress. But I would, unless I knew, I got to try and get what I can. You're right. Minnesota, you know, they're in a tough situation because they can't keep anyone. But, you know, they got to build stuff around Ricky Rubio, you know.
I think you got to cut bait and see what you can do, see if you can go in a different direction because you're going to lose him. I think you have to know that by now. He's gone. And if you don't get anything for him, then you look extra dumb. You look extra dumb. Last one for the road. D. Wills, you start this one off. Rajon Rondo, cut bait or wait?
Cut bait. I mean, you already been moving that direction. You had a good rhythm going when he was coming back. I would give him some exposure, let people know that he's moving back to health, find you a team that really needs a leader to take him over the top, and then move him, try to get you some pieces back, or try to you know, see if that's going to continue to get you some draft picks. But I think they got a nice young nucleus. They've been playing without him. You got a new young coach. I think you just complete the – you can finish the job you started in moving.
Okay, okay, okay. PhD, what are your thoughts on that?
Cut bait, get some draft picks or a couple of players back quick. I mean, as soon as you can.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you. You know, he's already kind of been reported as a malcontent, a little bit temperamental. I just can't – you can't roll with a guy like that when you know stuff is going to be rough. You know, it's like having that girlfriend that you know, met you when you were riding high and you was, you know, spending $150 on dinner. And now, you know, the recession hits and the economy bad and she got these expensive tastes. You just know
right.
It's not going to end well. You know it's not going to go right. So that's one way you might say, you know what, I'm going to have to tighten my belt, and I know that you're not about that. So, you know, let's just go ahead and end this real quick. You know, and that's the situation with Rondo. I think you know, when stuff is going well, cats are good. Everybody's chilling. When cats are losing, you know, not so hot. So we're going to end this edition of Cut Beta Weight.
Marcus,
right,
I will have to say
it.
that scenario with the tightening your belt, and we got to end this real quick, it came off your tongue real smooth, like you've said it a few times.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about, Phil. let's get into the dog of the week. Here we go. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital dog of the week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. You know how it goes. D. Wills, I'm going to need you to weigh in first, my man. I'm going to hit you off like this.
We need more dogs.
My dog of the week is Old Canada, Nick Stauskas, who's the U.S. Basketball player, basketball writers, Oscar Robertson National Player of the Week. He had 22.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, one steal per game, shot 57% from the field, 60% from three-point range, wins over Iowa, Michigan State, and Wisconsin. Big Nick.
Okay. All right. PhD, you know how it goes. Who you got?
Nice pick there, Devon. Stauskas' game, man, has improved so much. My dog of the week, I'm going to go with Ramoki Huma. Been on our show a couple of times. He is the president of the National Association, the National Player Collegiate Player Association, and they're making some big moves right now, man. He's representing a group of players, college players, including the guys at Northwestern. They're getting really close to kind of having a unionized situation. Ramoki's been on our show many times over the last couple of years, so just want to say thanks for fighting for the players and real proud for all the accomplishments, Ramoki.
Yeah, Ramoki was going to be my dog of the week because they are making some headway towards being able to unionize and just moving the conversation forward to a place where maybe something actually happens, something changes, and something gets done. So hats off to him and his organization and all the folks that are supporting him and working with him. Hats off to all those folks. That'll do it for this edition of the Real Sports Guys, the Renegades. We'll catch you next week, same time, same place. Until then, be easy and be blessed. Peace.